All right, so the title, I think, is Song Leading Techniques. Now, we just got through doing a little bit of chorus, what I call chorus or music class or whatever, and that's not the type of technique I'm talking about. So the technique I had in mind, and maybe it's wrong, but I guess it's what we're going to pursue here for a moment, is more or less leading songs in a church or a formal setting, but in a little bit of a foundational manner that you can apply that then to music class, to certainly to schools, and so on like that. So I'm happy for you ladies that are here. I know in our tradition we don't have the women lead songs very often, but singing is an integral part of our church experience, and having some, I want to say knowledge, but experience, whatever, to add, to bring to that is helpful. Now, I have a couple things I want to do, and I don't know what order to do them in. This is a big problem that I have, but I struggled a bit in preparing my music exercises. Music is actually difficult for me to teach. For a number of reasons. Maybe I'll give a little bit of autobiographical detail. I very much loved to sing when I was young. I loved the idea of singing. I loved listening to singing. But I had some very serious ear problems and could not sing on tune. So I'm a little bit like the teacher who teaches dyslexic students or something like that, the one who, you know, also learn to read and then help someone else with a reading problem, let's say. A teacher who had dyslexia, who is now helping someone with dyslexia, that type of thing. I have a very peculiar way that I work with music myself and getting it wired in, and so it's not necessarily the way that everybody else needs to use or should use. And with that, as I'm getting older, I am also finding myself less and less capable, it seems like. So I'm actually going backwards instead of forwards, which is not a good feeling. So I'm not as quite as confident or as clear as I should be. So that's one issue, one reason that it's a little difficult for me to teach music. My energy is lower, so that's another reason. Another reason, though, is because I care so deeply about it. Now, I don't know that if this is something you face, but when you study something very, very well, like much, a lot, and my other experience with that would be with academic history, let's say specifically late antique history. It's actually difficult for me to teach that because where do I begin? I mean, there are so many interrelations of so many facts and so many, and it's like, how do you make a sketch of something? We lived in Romania for between 2001 and 2008. And one of my friends, Delbert Petersheim, made John's father, the one who was just wandering in here a little bit lost a little while ago, made the comment to me. He said, "What do you do?" And like, this is what happens. You go back to the States. "Oh, you're in Romania. What's Romania like?" How do I explain something like that? And just, you know, this guy has about three sentences. It's about all the attention that he's able to give to that. And so like, how do you do that? So that's a little bit how music is for me. I find it as I grow older, and I'm getting a little bit more and more, it's becoming more and more difficult for me to teach it. I'm seeing it as more and more important all the time. And then I look at it more as a skill and a craft, an art that you learn, and that's what it's for. Whereas I look at that's how it seems to me. Whereas I think there's a spiritual dimension to singing that is extremely deep, and that's actually what intrigues me more than the actual art of it. And it is an art. It is a skill. It is a thing that we work at together. So I thought, man, I wish they'd have asked me to talk about that instead of actually teaching the techniques, you know, because the techniques are kind of boring in a sense. But I decided, well, for my three music classes, I'm teaching rudiments and I think inspiring to sing, I'm going to write a paper about why I think singing is so important. All right, I entitled it Kingdom Song, and everybody in my class gets one. Now, I'm not going to make you read it, and I'm not going to give you a quiz on it. All I'm going to do is give it to you, so please take it. At the same time, I don't want you to be distracted by it now, because we will talk about some of the stuff, and I'm thinking of it more for you to read, and then if you wanted to converse about it, I'm glad to discuss it. So maybe, Judy, you take a couple of them and just take one and pass it around, and then you, if you don't mind, taking one and then passing it around. All right, like I said, don't get too distracted by it, but I do believe that music and singing and the work of the kingdom and building the kingdom and living in the kingdom are greatly overlap. All right, does that make sense? So with that in mind, I want to now, before I begin with techniques, I want to talk a little bit about preparation for leading songs. Now this I have in mind, especially leading songs at church. Now if you, again, in most of our, yes?
Four more.
In most of our church services, if you are a woman, you will probably not be asked to stand up front and formally lead them. How many? One? On the other hand, something that is happening in our churches, and I think is good, we're doing lots of other forms of singing, whether it's at people's homes or little small gatherings or on mission churches or small house churches all over the place that we might get involved in. And very much this, you could be asked to, you know, pick some songs and lead them. Please, you know, do this. One of the first things I noticed, is this is what I was referring to when I said I'm doing something that I'm going to talk against, is you do not want to go into that kind of an experience breathless. You just come running into the door. You need a little bit of time of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Preparation.
Take some time to prepare. If you did not know, like you found out 30 seconds before it starts or 3 minutes or whatever, that's not your fault. You just ask the Lord for grace and move on from there. But if you do know, take some time to prepare. And I'm thinking of maybe about three things with preparation. Maybe four. Let's see if I can remember them all. One of them is pray about it a little bit. Okay? And it doesn't need to be a long, wordy, sanctimonious prayer. It's like get in the spirit of prayer and pray. Pray hard about it for a little bit. Secondly, take a little bit of time to pick the song or to think about it. I like, for Sunday morning, I'm often leading songs, and I like to pick songs that are somewhat keyed into either worship, coming together, or something connected to the Sunday school lesson, all right? Well, you just can't know that without even thinking about it, right? So take a little bit of time to do that. Another form of preparation is watch what you eat and drink. Now, of course, the main thing in your song leading techniques is what are you taking into your body? And dehydration affects your voice, practically speaking, before it does anything else. All right, your voice box is the first thing affected, and the last to get healed back into shape. So hydration is exceptionally important, and it needs to be. It's the water that you're. By the way, the best thing for your voice is just plain water. Okay? Not lemonade, not this other stuff. They can all be okay, but whatever. But water is really what your voice needs. And it you cannot give it to it 5 minutes before you sing or lead. You know, I've had people tell me it's the water you drink 24 hours before. Other people have said 7 hours. I'm sure there, even in this room, there could be people, technicians who know pretty well exactly. Well, I don't know. I just know it's before. So that's part of the preparation work. Do a little bit of prep. That starts on Saturday already, all right, if you're leading songs Sunday morning. Think, in other words, be intentional with it a little bit. Think about it ahead of time. Now, if it's a terrible fear in your mind and you just be in denial, hold it out there and wait till the last minute, okay. But that's not that. We salute your courage, but we're trying to talk about some good techniques. So one technique is to prepare. Prepare your mind, prepare your soul, prepare your voice with lots of water. If you are a novice, especially pick your songs and maybe practice the beat and blowing the pitch and doing all that other stuff. The fourth thing that I thought about saying then for as far as preparation is get to church on time. My children mock me because I say this, you know, it's time to get out, and Dad, we hate being the first people at church. Nobody's even there, and it's way earlier than these men. And that puts me in a bad, kind of a bad frame of mind, because I feel like I'm wrestling with my family to get them out in our vehicle. And that's one of the things I did like about Romania, is you could just walk to church. You're going to be there. My wife, whom I love very deeply, and it's all good, but she has this obsession with, you don't go out the door till everything is done, you know. And believe me, the amount of things that can get needed to be done right up to the last minute, and then out the door we go, and it's caused a little bit of strain sometimes. So get to your place on time so that you're ready for it. That's all part of the technique that I'm calling the technique of preparation, for lack of a better word. If we have time, then I will talk more about the big picture, the spiritual overview that we come with, and that I think about with singing. But let's keep on moving with our technicalities here just a little bit now. Take the time to pray. Take the time to think through the song a little bit, or songs that you're singing. And work with them. I'll tell you one little story I had with that illustrates that thing with time. One of my best friends is my cousin Chad. Chad Miller was leading the song. Was responsible to lead songs at our church in Seymour, Missouri. I was in church, and I don't know if it was exactly time to get started, but it was getting close, and he sidled in and sat beside me, and then looked over at me with this disgusted look that only he, or maybe just about him, maybe it's he and his brothers, could just completely irritated. Do you know how dumb I feel to have to go up and lead songs just after I've gotten so upset with my family to get them into the van so we can get to church? Like, yes, I know exactly what you mean. Whatever. Anyhow, he led the songs. I don't think any of us were too scarred. Okay. What happens after you pick the song? One of the things I'm thinking about here, too, and I might get into this more as we have time again, is we're not just talking about techniques of song leading here. We're talking about teaching techniques, all right, because most of you are teachers. Now, most or all of you are here to learn more for yourself. I really don't know. I know Joel isn't, so no. I'm not sure why he's not. Anyway, we're not only, as teachers, I'm also thinking of the fact that you're not only talking to yourself about how do I do this, but then how do we teach it? So we'll get to that in a bit. So here's one of the first things you want to encourage your students and do yourself. As you get up front and your knees are knocking together and your mouth is dry and a little bit quivery and whatever else, and it's crazy how that affects people even years and years after they've been leading songs. It's actually much easier for me to speak than it is for me to lead the song. So, and I've been doing it for a long time, relatively speaking. So, I don't know. Maybe some people just don't ever get over it. But you're nervous, all right? So what do you do? Well, the very first thing to do is as you get up, is to announce what number you're leading. Do it clearly and with good strength, right? Now, and I teach my students how do you do that? How do you make your voice strong? Okay. Now, I have a voice that carries relatively well and irritates people and that kind of thing. But I can push it out if I need to. But the technique is pretty much you firm up your abdomen and you get it strong. That's the foundation of your voice. And then you speak. Okay. You get it there. Speak up into that mic and people listen. Okay. Well, the first thing that does actually a little bit is gives you a little bit of courage. Some people say fake it until you make it or something like that, and nobody wants to be a hypocrite, but courage is actually moving ahead when you're a little bit scared of it, right? So you're not being hypocritical, you're just working with it. Be strong with your voice, and it actually gives you a little bit of strength with the rest of you. Okay? Sometimes I've had students who have a difficult time blowing a pitch and actually humming the pitch, right? And I've had this. Have any of you ever? I struggled with that, so don't feel embarrassed. Have you struggled with that? Have you met students who struggle with that? Let's just talk about a technique for a little bit here, okay? Somebody stole my paint bucket. Okay, it's all right. It'll show up somewhere, sometime, somehow, somewhere. Okay, I'm sure it was in there, and I do not feel it. Okay, so one of the things that people have, they have it on their phones and all that, so that's at least easy. But if your hand is trembling pretty bad and your lips are quivering, and we'll just wait just a moment. I might. It helps to really grip this pitch by not saying if you have a phone. That at least is simpler. Some people use their phones. I just don't. You know what the word Luddite means? You familiar with that word? Luddite? I'm a Luddite when it comes to this stuff. I do not embrace new things rapidly. So anyway, I'm used to a pitch pipe. But I teach them to wrap their lips clearly pretty hard around that thing, and then you focus that breath into just one of those holes to make that sound, because it's amazing the way those things can honk around when you're not sure of what's going on. So practice that at home. Now, if you have trouble making the same sound, many of you will come from plainer churches where you don't have instruments. And I do, I have learned to really appreciate a keyboard in music class, simply because with my ear trouble, it really helps me to move from one note to another and to teach my students. And it's the same concept. With a keyboard, what you do is you get your head right down there on the keyboard, and if you have to, touching the keyboard, all right? And then you make the sound. Now, what is sound?
Vibrations.
Vibrations traveling through the air, and we measure it by how many vibrations there are per second. And I have no clue what most of them all are. For some reason, I think A or A flat, I forget which one, is 220, which is 220 vibrations per second. All right, I just love that little thing. So we hum A. All right, something is telling your tongue to vibrate at 200, or your vocal cords to vibrate at 220 vibrations per second. Like, how can you even do that? It's pretty amazing. All right, and then of course an octave down is 110, and an octave up is 440, and that type of thing. It's really, really fascinating. So it's actually physical. Get your head right next to that keyboard, or if it's your pitch pipe, loosen up your lips and make the same sound as you're breathing. Alright? If you don't mind me borrowing your pitch pipe, and I will try to, I don't want to ask you to do it, and then I will try to make sure it's not too messed up when you get it back. So, D flat is often a bad one on pitch pipe, so that's not too whatever. So, some reason on these, that's often the first one that goes. So now, let me practice. So I go. All right, you hear that? You feel it. You feel it more than you hear it. You do that enough, it teaches your ear. All right, that's where that is. So do, and there you go. And you know that can be hard. So. You're the only person that can do that on your own, so I won't have you practice. Practice at home where you're not too worried. If you have trouble, you're already one step ahead because you know you have trouble. The big trouble is when people don't know that they have trouble. Now, my brothers abused me of that that innocence long ago. As I was growing up, I had no trouble knowing because I was told in no uncertain terms. Well, they were actually being nice to me, but I, as a young child, I kind of made a commitment. I'm never going to tell somebody to sing on key. So I was so hurt and wounded by it. It was really hard on me. But as a matter of fact, it was good for me to know. And I have told other people that they're not singing on key, but I tried to remember how that felt. And I tried to do it in a very, non-personal way, where you just like, you're not quite there, and you know, waver your voice up and down like a siren until you feel the vibrations meet each other, and then, or go in sync with each other. And there, you feel that. Now, the more you feel it, the more you start hearing it. The more you start hearing it, the more your brain will start saying, that's what that sound is. You don't have to feel it each time. So that's one technique, is learn to blow the pitch and hum the pitch the same time as you're blowing it. And I've had quite a number of students that have needed to learn that, okay, for that part. All right, blow the pitch, blow it clearly. Here's another thing. If you have a supportive group, if you have trouble, be open about it. Ask your people to help hum the pitch with you. All right, now the thing that we'll get at in like a choir or something like that is you don't hum the pitch. You just listen to it. Your ear is the key, and then it's ready, all right? But as you're starting, practice humming the pitch, and then they stay on pitch with you. We had a new person do it the other day, and the group wasn't quite ready, and so, yeah, he blew the pitch and started on a different pitch, and that's especially bad when it's kind of a high song to begin with, and then away we go. Hum the pitch clearly. If you have issues, tell people it's fine to hum along with me, and, you know, just give me all the moral support you can. I remember the first couple of times I led songs in church that, it was actually amazing. You said the number, they actually turned to it, okay? I mean, they're listening to me. It's kind of amazing that they even do that. And then you blow the pitch and indicate one way or another with your voice or hand or something that you're going, and they sing. And the sound comes up and meets you, and it's actually a huge privilege to listen to the song from the front. It's often much better sound than it is in the... And I wish there was a way to work with that we would all get the same blessing from this singing, but at least the way some of our churches are set up, I don't know that it's really easy, but it's like, here we go. They're actually wanting to help. They want to do this. They're rooting for you. And so it's actually kind of an exhilarating feeling. And then you're going. All right, now, I'll go over this on another one of my sessions, but music, it basically consists of three things. So pitch, which is the number of vibrations that sound makes per second. All right, got the right pitch? That's what you're looking for any kind of a jump. Second thing is rhythm. Rhythm is what time you make the pitch in compared to other pitches. All right, so how long are you holding it, or how long are you... Everything else is timbre. Sometimes it looks like timbre, or we can also say tone, all right? What is timbre? Timbre is everything about sound that is not pitch and rhythm. It's kind of hilarious, but if you play a cello or a violin or a human voice and a piano all in the key of G, they all sound different, all right? Even though they're making the same amount of vibrations, or let's say they're going through a sequence of notes all in the same tone, they're all different. That's tone, that's timbre. And getting good tone out is maybe the hardest thing to getting your students or a choir or your church to work at, especially students and especially boys. Why? Why boys?
Your voice changes.
Your voice is changing. And man, there's all kinds of nasty things happening up there. And these adolescent boys can put out so much sound other than actual music while they're singing that it can be difficult to work with. Now, girls also go through a bit of a voice change at adolescence and things like that, so it's not easy for anybody. But getting people, I had a teacher tell me, you know, keep them singing, and they come out the other end and just blossom. I mean, it's just, so the school time really is, I think, the critical time for getting people going. All right, back to song leading now. So we've blown the pitch. Well, we've announced the song, we've blown the pitch, we're ready to start. So basically, we're now talking about beating time. Rhythm and pitch, for that matter. But let me talk about just a few things before we go to the basics of beating time, or how to teach it. This is for you more experienced song leaders, or as you're going into it. What are a couple things to watch for? So one thing I say is give a bit of an introduction, what's sometimes called an intro beat or something like that, where you show you're ready to start. A beginning novice, there you go. So a beginning teacher or song leader will sometimes basically start with their voice and then kind of get their hand going and then quit and shut it off with their voice. So that's a mistake. Really, the song leader is not about singing himself. The song leader is there to help keep people together with their singing, right? And there are three key times in a song that the song leader needs to be clear. One is at the beginning, and one is at the end. Now, I'm wondering if you know what the third one is that I can think of. There might be more than one, okay? So I'm thinking of a different one. So you're nodding your head.
The middle.
Sorry?
The middle.
The middle. All right. Very good. You get it going. Yeah. Good. I'm thinking of a specific spot in the middle. It's not necessarily in the center. Yes?
Between, like, when the chorus starts?
That's good. Yeah. If you stay in time, you should be able to kind of keep it there. All right? Okay, so it's okay if you don't say. It catches people by surprise. Part of your prep time should be to look for these little things. And it's a bird's eye. All right? What do we do at the bird's eye? If there is a bird's eye. All right? Because that is totally up to... Got it, right? The leader. I'm waiting for someone to answer. It's totally up to the leader. What are we going to do here? And the congregation can be so supportive and so wanting to do whatever that leader wants them to do, but they don't know what the leader wants them to do. And in fact, the leader doesn't know what he wants or what he's thought about or whatever. And kind of a rule of thumb is, if you don't know, then observe it. And then sometimes different songs, we have different ones that we have kind of traditionally learned, and the poor song leader doesn't even know they could be sung any other way. Now, then there are some of us who like to throw curveballs at, like, watch, okay, and we're only going to, you know, do it some of the time. So watch me and I'll tell you. Now, for worship, especially if it's a bird's eye that is sometimes done and sometimes not, this is different in school, but in church, I like to be very clear, all right? And I like to even tell them that there's a bird's eye and we are not going to observe it. Or we will observe it on the last verse. Or we will observe it each time, all right? One really bad song is He Leadeth Me, all right? That has a bird's eye on some editions every half score all the way through the song. And if you have a conductor who is not knowing what we do in a sympathetic congregation, well, they'll just stop it, hold all of them. And it can really drag out. And, you know, nobody is meeting for this to be a difficult, bloody experience type of thing. So they be clear what you want with your bird's eyes, right? And how do you indicate a bird's eye? Okay, there might be different ways to do it, but one way not to do it is to continue on like normal. All right, that's not the bird's eye. You're just moving on, all right? I will also say this. If you fix in your mind how you want it done, and then you're clear in your direction and you're leading, almost all congregations that I've been a part of are sympathetic. They want to do what they're being told to do as long as they know what it is, all right? So if they mess up or you mess up or something like that, they'll forgive you. They'll work at it. And almost all learning musicians or song leaders will have to teach their congregation that they actually mean what they're saying. All right? So they will hold the bird's eye while the congregation blunders on. All right? And then, you've all heard that. Well, it's just a train wreck for a bit. And that's not the goal, especially on a Sunday morning when you're wanting to create a worshipful experience. But typically, it doesn't take very long. Like, yes, okay, he knows what he's doing. He's wanting to hold the bird's eye. We are going to watch. We will do what he says, all right, and be together. Again, those are unfortunate when it happens on a Sunday morning. So I try on a Sunday morning to get not just completely traditional songs, but songs that are pretty familiar, pretty that we know fairly well, or we've been learning them and we're working at them and stuff like that. And then hymn sings or song services or whatever, we learn the new ones and whatever. That brings me to another point about technique. Not really technique. school teaching actually helps a lot with this. You get the, because we start our songs. Does it end at quarter till or 3 o'clock? It's three, isn't it? Yeah, okay. Just the practice of doing it every day, that really, really, really helps. It gets you going. But one thing you can just almost bank on is you are going to get embarrassed. All right, now we've talked about the congregation doing stuff, and the congregation is embarrassed. The problem is the congregation is a big group and doesn't feel the embarrassment very much. The song leader, on the other hand, oh, it can be really, really tough. And, if, and you may not believe it, but I was kind of a sensitive soul growing up, and I hated for people to laugh at me. And there is still a little bit of a hurt as I laugh hollowly along with them. So, whatever. So my rough experience, I had a number of them, but I think my very worst one was, you know the song Pray Pray the Old Time Way? Boy, it's been a long time since I led that song. Something about that evening was not going very well. Okay, all of this was the third song of three. You know, we always sing three. Where did we get that tradition? So we sing three songs. This is the third one, and I am just ready for this thing to be done and escape back into that sea of humanity that's down there below. All right, but we're thumping along. All right, and we finally get done, and I clap the book shut, and I am halfway down the steps when my dad's sad voice starts the fourth word. Just, you know, he wasn't quite doing what he had taught me to do, and that's watch the leader. Other people were watching, like, he's done. He thought we finished. I actually had only read the third verse. And I guess, and then he was just in there, so he just kept right on going. What in the world does a guy do?
What did you do?
I turned around and walked back up. I opened the book and pedaled my hand around for him. And if you're really, really keyed up, you can basically tell what words are coming just by how they're saying them, you know. And then you get to the chorus where it's all pretty normal. I wasn't at the right place, that's for sure. And I guess I could feel the rhythm enough that I kind of knew where. And anyway, we had Dad back there. He's keeping the whole thing together. So and then I went back. And I sat down, I had to have one more verse, one more song, so I had to lead the fourth one. I think it was preaching that night or something, so I only had to lead four. And he got up, I think the next one then was Nearer My God to Thee, and then I went to the basement, and I stayed in the basement after that, and after church was over, I fled to my vehicle. I did not want these guys cheerfully laughing at me the whole time. It was rough for this 15-year-old kid. Anyhow, I'm saying kid kind of on purpose, because it sort of fits the... I don't know, the maturity level, I guess. Anyway, it was good for me. I'm not 100% sure that Dad ever apologized. I'm not 100% sure he ever even found out. a couple people actually told me they tried, they did their best to encourage me. And you never know, do you? When someone's really embarrassed, what do? Do you try to encourage them? Do you just leave it alone? What do you do with that? I don't know if there is a right way. But I will say this, at the moment I just wanted to be left alone, but I do remember the people who said something nice to me, and it stayed with me. Not, in one sense, the memory's bad because I remember how badly I felt, and that just kind of reminds me of it all the way. But I also remember that, you know what, from a more mature perspective, they were rooting for me. They're trying to help me. They're supporting me. They felt it, and they felt bad, and they're just trying to communicate that in whatever way they can. What I've often said, if singing, leading songs, you're going to get embarrassed. You just plain are. And I had lots of embarrassing things happen in addition and beyond and beside that. But that kind of, I think that kind of broke the ice as far as, you know what, you're going to live, it's going to be all right, we're going to work through it. So with your students, within church or something like that, that's one thing. Prep yourself to be a little bit embarrassed. Don't do it on purpose, but if you're embarrassed, it's okay. There'll be a way beyond that, and that's maybe the cost of the kingdom, is that you're going to have to be a little bit embarrassed in order to be effective. Okay, is there anything does this bring any questions to mind up to this point? Okay, we'll start with you.
So you said something about leading in and then you just come down. Like, how do you give a very definite start? Because I've had different people tell me different things.
Yes. So here's a couple keys. You're talking about your intro beat
your
there.
Your intro, when you're starting off a whole group of people, how do you make it very clear when you want to start?
Okay, so a couple of things with this, and there are different techniques for that. Find one that works for you. But here are two things that that I notice. One of them is eye contact. Don't look down. Look up. So especially like at our get the first couple words in your mind and have eye contact with your people. Now a whole congregation, that's tough. But if people are being attentive, and they're going to try to be, I think, generally I feel that way, they're watching you. You're watching them, and that eye contact is signaling as well. Like, You send all kinds of subtle clues as to when this song begins, that eye contact actually preps you, that you miss if your eyes are down and their eyes are down, all right? So that's like in choir, for example, like heads up as we begin this whole thing. Watch me. A second one is a breath. A breathe in and out we go, all right? So that's kind of, now you can be holding your breath, and especially if you get involved in choral conducting and that kind of thing, there's all kinds of tricks to soothe them. But we're just talking about, normally we're going to say, amen, right? So now, what I tend to do is bring my beat up like this, and then we start. Now, if your first beat is an upbeat, I just give a beat and then start again. So we just, let's do Amazing Grace here, just all of us together. So, we'll just do that now, here we go. Amen. So there, what I did is I actually gave the upbeat with the correct beginning, the third beat is what that song starts on. But did you notice my breath? I'm watching you, and I just kind of gave a little, let's try it again, okay, here we go.
Amen.
And you started, I didn't even go with you. Now, if you start clearly, they will catch on pretty quickly that you're going. And that's often what song leaders will, they actually lead with their voice, and their hand is more for them, and sometimes if they're not watching, people aren't watching, that's how they get to them, right? But I will say, you know, typically people will try to follow you if they trust you. Like they know that you're wanting to communicate and you want them to watch, all right? Mm-hmm. So teachers and song leaders complain all the time that people aren't watching. Well, whose job is that? It's the congregations, but it's also your job as a teacher. Get them watching. All right. So often we have a small church, but I'm watching them. I say, here's a classic mistake. Say the song number. Say it again and lead the song. Okay. Watch your people. See if they're when they're ready. If they're still paging through their books, they're not ready. Okay. They're just not. So have the courage to watch them. Another mistake is when, especially if you're a novice, you're almost certainly nervous. And how much you want to bet their words are connected? Okay. you're nervous. What happens when you're nervous? You start too soon and you go too fast, right? And then if you have somebody like me who's with my students, I will try to sing the beat that you're actually doing, all right? Well, that's faster than what you're singing, so then they speed up even more, and boy, by the time we get to the end of the verse that they're leading, you know, this is usually students, not so much in church, but in school, we can be really galloping along at a pretty rapid rate. All right, let's try a different one. Follow the path of Jesus. So, sing it with me, we'll start, here we go.
Follow the path of Jesus.
All right, I want you all stand. Let's just do it a little bit, okay? Now, you're familiar with the beating patterns, I assume, right? Okay. So my thing is down, left, right, up, which you give the more or less the same amount of time to that. So don't start your song with your hand down, right? Have your hand up. So this is, again, an indication that we are now ready to begin. We'll blow the pitch here while we're at it. You can sing parts. We're just going to do maybe through the first line.
No, right, far, right.
Now, just you can go ahead with me if you can. Have your hand ready. And now, what I do is I turn like this often because it's the same tune. Now, you guys know that it's opposite of you, so I'm going to face you so I can watch you.
No, right, and we go. Follow the path of Jesus.
Then I'll go this. keep going. Three, four. Down, left, right, up.
Down, left, right, up. Down, left, right, up. Down, left, right, up. One, two, three.
That brings me to the last one. You can do this how you like, but when we get to the ending of the song, I usually don't beat that completely out. I just hold it and count it in my head and then give a clear cutoff. All right, now you can do it about three different ways. Is that our first bell? You can beat through it and then cut it. All right? Or you can hold it, cut it. Or you can beat through it and keep going, right on with the next verse, right? Be clear in your mind what it is that you want to do, because, excuse me, if you don't know, they for sure don't know, all right? They will want to do it. But that's the ending part that I was talking about. You're clear at the beginning, you're clear at the ending, you're clear on bird's eyes, all right? Now, other times you may want to add a bird's eye to it, right? Tell your people, and then usually what I do is just hold my hand up on a bird's eye. What's the song with the bird's eye? We just did one, Standing on the Promises. Did you see that? Can we do that chorus maybe? All right.
Standing, standing, standing on the promises of God my Savior.
Quite this fast. I was going to give you a few techniques for the rhythm. Some people learn rhythm very easily. For other people, it's quite difficult to feel that thing. And what I have found the most helpful is clapping, all right? Where you clap rhythm. And my most helpful thing is what they call that regular pop beat that they teach with the Boches 8 method, if you're used to that. Are you familiar with it? Everybody used to that? Okay, so five, snap with the right, clap. Left hand. All right, here we go. Yeah. Okay. So you get that. Okay. Just try it with me once. So I'll count with you. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. Okay. Let's sing a song. Keep going.
Twilight is stealing over the sea. Shadows are falling.
What that does is it crosses from one side to the other side, and music, specifically the math that's in music, unites your whole brain. It pulls your left and right hemispheres together. And here's a key. If students have difficulty with reading comprehension and with math, specifically story problems in math, what they need is music lessons. All right? This has been shown repeatedly that good music lessons, and whether it's piano or even voice or something like that, their reading comprehension will get better, almost certainly. And I've seen that. I've actually observed that. These guys took music lessons, and they can understand how to solve these math problems. All right? And of course, reading comprehension, that's the place to test it, is in a word problem in math, all right, whether they know what to do there. So that's one successful way, play a song like rhythm. Another one is where you have three beats and you just hit, clap, snap. All right, so that would be like,
revive us again, village heart,
okay? And that's one way of getting rhythm into your head and into your students' heads. Okay, I'm afraid I rambled a little bit too much. Were there some more?
I'm just gonna tell a story.
Oh, you can tell a story. Okay, well, you're welcome to tell a story, but maybe I need to dismiss you. I think I heard the third bell, or the second bell, didn't I?
There was the second.
Was it the second? Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, you're dismissed, but go ahead and tell me the story.
I went to a strange church. I had some friends there, and they asked me to lead singing.
10% the last of the congregation. So I put myself way out on the limb and took selections.
Oh, good.
And they picked two songs that I'd never sang before. And get to the end of the song, and there's this coda. And I just freaked out and stopped and sat down. Just this empty silence in the room. It was so awesome.
They didn't keep going. So what's worse, keep going or the awkward silence? They're both bad, aren't they? Yeah. No, I'm sorry. Okay, I don't know if there's anybody who has a question to ask, but you're welcome to go because I know you have another class to get to, right?
Thank you.
Thank you. Another thing that's messing up our rhythm in our congregations is just the not observing triplets. In congregational singing, there's a lot of times there are 3/8 notes to one beat, and that really messes us up.
Yeah.
I would like to appeal to all of us to observe triplets.
There we go. Watch for triplets. We have one coming up in our in the songs that I've selected, so hopefully we'll be able to do that. Yeah.